Today on the Pure Sweat Basketball Show,
develop that sense of pride is by playing a guy that's better than you in one-on-one.
Maybe I led you to believe it was easy when it wasn't. Maybe I made you think my highlights started at the free throw line and not in the gym.
Turn my headphones up!
Let's eliminate the will to win and think about the will to prepare to win.
That's how winning is done.
It's about being a great teammate. It's about being accountable to one another. It's about being tough. It's about doing the right things for each other, but it's about doing it every day.
Hi, this is Jay Billis of ESPN. You're listening to the Pure Sweat Basketball Show. I'm sweating already.
Thanks for tuning into the show that takes a hard look into every aspect of the game and makes every episode a micro clinic. I'm your host, Alan Stein. Today's show is brought to you by Dr. Dish, the most advanced shooting machine in the world. In today's episode, I get Drew to offer some tips on becoming a better defender. But before we dive in, did you know that the average number of steals per game by a high school basketball team was 8 last season? Thanks to our partners at Crossover for making film sessions more efficient by clipping and tagging your plays for you. In as little as 12 hours, Crossover can provide you with interactive shot charts and advanced stats that you and your staff can access from any PC or mobile device. Visit crossoverwithak.com/puresweat to try a game for free. All right, let's jump in with today's topic. Drew, we know that offense is the sexy part of the game, especially for players. That's what's so important to them. But talk to us about how important it is and why it's so important to be a great defender, both on the singular level as a player and then on the collective level as a team, if you're actually interested in winning.
This is something that I had to grow and mature as I got, you know, older, whether it was my playing career or my training career. As a player, I know I, you know, came as a freshman in high school to Webster Groves, and I was an offensive-minded player. I shot 1,000 shots before school every day. I knew I could get buckets. I had a great handle. I worked on my dribbling, passing, etc. But the one thing that I struggled with was defense. I just didn't take enough pride in it, maybe, or I just didn't understand defense because I grew up in a kind of AAU basketball era of, you know, 2-3 zone, 1-3-1 traps, etc., to do anything we could to win games. And so I didn't have proper teaching, maybe of man-to-man defense, which is what my high school played. And I also didn't have enough pride in defense. I thought, you know, oh man, I can get buckets, I'm good. But my coach benched me and didn't play me until I really took pride in defense and gave just as much energy and effort on defensive end as I did the offensive end, which was great. At the time, I hated it. I claimed I hated him at the time because I thought that, you know, I could have helped the team on offense. But in the long run, it really helped me because it gave me a chance to play college basketball because I was a solid defender. I never became an elite defender. But what I did was I took pride, bought in. I was really good systematically. I could contain the ball for the most part. I got through screens, etc. So I think as a player, I understand if you're listening to this right now, you're thinking, man, defense is not sexy. It's not cool. I get buckets. But a good coach won't let you let down the team by taking off the defensive end. As a skills coach, my first, you know, I started training Brad Beal when I was a junior in high school. He's my first really guy. I didn't start working on defense until 3 years ago. And the reason I started working on defense is because in the NBA, the one thing that drives NBA players is their salary, winning, and all-star game appearances. So basically awards, contracts, and winning. That's all they care about. And what we realized were teams started valuing defenders so much more than bucket getters because it's an era of team basketball. You know, the old school Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Dwayne Wade, even LeBron James, all those guys winning championships, ISO ball, has kind of changed into team ball. And as team ball continues to, move up the ranks and stuff like that, all they care about is winning games. And if you're able to help your team win games, which means you have to be good on both ends of the floor, you're going to get bigger contracts. And so Brad Beal was really the first person I started working on defense with, and he had a great series against Kyle Korver in the playoffs that got a lot of notoriety where he just really locked up Kyle Korver and helped the Wizards, win a playoff series, which they hadn't done in a while. And people were ranting and raving about Brad, but a lot of people didn't realize he put in a lot of work the summer before on defense. This summer, same thing, Jordan Clarkson, the Los Angeles Lakers, got criticized a lot last year for his defensive ability and really just his defensive effort. And this summer, he worked on it a lot. And I remember the first time we worked on getting through ball screens, he was like, damn, Drew, like literally hated me, almost passed out because defense is hard. It's not something that you want to do over the summer when you don't have a game for, you know, 6 months. But it's something that Luke Walton has been praising him for, his defensive effort going into the season. And then guys like Kelly Oubre, who was on the Washington Wizards as well, Kelly found himself at the beginning of the season in a different stance than most of my players, where he wasn't a guy going in that was a bona fide starter. He didn't have a starting position locked up, and he didn't have minutes locked up, and he found himself on the bench a lot more than he wanted to. But he decided, you know, the Wizards were losing a lot of games, and he said, man, the reason we're losing is we don't have anybody that's really just a defender first, offensive guy second. He decided to be that guy. We spent a lot of time watching film. We spent a lot of time working on different things, containing the ball, hand placement, watched a lot of Kawhi Leonard and guys like that are really good on defense. And Kelly Oubre's now playing 25 minutes a game, and it's all because he became a defender first, and that's helping the Wizards win more games, which is obviously the reason why Coach Brooks has him on the floor, because, you know, his job's on the line.
Absolutely love that. The common theme, whether you were talking about yourself as a ninth grader at Webster Groves or you're talking about Kelly Oubre playing for the Wizards, was you have to make the conscious choice to start taking pride in defense and making sure that you put just as much heart, love, and soul into your defense as you do as into getting buckets. So that's the first step. But let's talk kind of from a tactical standpoint. You know, even as a performance coach, I get lots of questions on how to be a better defender. So certainly I can provide some drills, some strength and agility drills to help improve lateral quickness and so forth. But as far as actually being a better defender, I've always kind of told folks, you know, playing one-on-one against somebody that's better than you is a great way to get better as a defender. But I just kind of throw that out there. I'd love to hear from you as the expert, what you'd recommend tactically for someone to become a better defender.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the first thing is to work on it. I think that the pride, one of the great ways to develop that sense of pride is by playing a guy that's better than you in one-on-one, because you can't, there's no excuses. You can't blame anybody else in one-on-one, which is why I love one-on-one so much. It's because you literally have to just stop, keep the guy from scoring. The guy in front of you, you just have to keep him in front of you. And so a couple on-ball things, let's go through some of the nuances, because I think that's important for coaches to kind of understand some of the things that can really help their players. On-ball defense, I think the most important things are, number one, teaching players how to get into the ball without fouling. So that basically means pressure without fouling. I think that too many times coaches teach, you know, pressure, but they don't teach it without fouling. So basically making sure that your feet stay back, your chest stays forward so that you can pressure them with your chest instead of your feet. Because if your feet are too close, eventually they're going to get even or by you and there's going to be some kind of trip up, or you're going to end up running into them, which is going to be a foul on the defense. So making sure you pressure with your chest, not your feet. Give your feet a little bit of cushion so that eventually you can beat them to the second spot. I'll talk about that in a second. Number two is keep your palms up. I think keeping your hands out or into the body is what a lot of old school coaches teach. The problem with keeping your hands out and being in a very defensive low stance is you're not very quick. I always ask people when I'm teaching them defense, who are the quickest athletes when it comes to reaction time? And almost all of them, after thought, think about Floyd Mayweather. Think about boxers. Because you have to literally escape, otherwise you get punched in the jaw. And so when I teach defense, on-ball defense, I like, instead of teaching a really low stance, I actually teach players to be in a boxer stance, because you're quick, you're on your feet. You're also a little bit taller so that you can contest shots and you're more disciplined, because if you're really low and a guy shot fakes and you jump, you're out of control. But if you're already in a not standing position, because you're not fast standing either, if you're in a boxer stance right. position, then you can contest that shot in a hurry. But also, if they go to shoot and shot fake, you're already kind of standing a little bit tall so that you can just challenge with your shot, or with your hand rather, instead of jumping and leaving your feet. So palms up at all times so that you're ready to shoot, and ultimately so that you can deflect passes and you can just interrupt anything that they're trying to do, whether that's dictate a play or just make a cross-court pass or a little pocket roll pass, etc. Next thing is dictate angles. I think it's important, more important, that players know how to dictate and kind of angle the ball than it is for them to necessarily be a lockdown defender. Because if you're smart, you can make up for lack of speed, you can make up for lack of strength, just by angling the ball to where your help is. I think that that's something that a lot of on-ball defenders don't know how to do, is is basically push the ball into where you want it to go. Quinn Snyder, who I love, he was one of the guys that I actually grew up learning player development from when he was at the University of Missouri and I was a young kid in St. Louis. Now he's, you know, coaching one of the best defensive teams with the Utah Jazz. And his word that he always uses, channel. He wants the on-ball defender to channel the ball to where his help is. And I love that. Just basically force them to where you want them to go. Another thing they have to be able to do is contain penetration in a one-on-one setting, which means you have to understand how quick you are, how quick the player you're guarding is, and you have to understand what your player that you're guarding wants to do so that you can ultimately stay in front of them in the long run. And so that means you might have to give them a little more cushion if they're a guy that's a driver first. If it's a guy that's a shooter first and wants to get off a three-pointer, you might have to crowd him a little more, but you also have to understand that once you run him off the three-point line, you're going to have to turn and sprint and beat him to the second spot so that you ultimately don't give up a layup or basically break down penetration so that everybody else has to rotate. And then the last thing you got to do is you've got to be shot fake and jab fake and even like hesitation fake discipline. And I think that that's something that a lot of people aren't good at is they overreact to jabs, they overreact to stutter steps, they overreact to shot fakes, they overreact to all these things. And once you start jumping around, then the offense owns you. And so it's basically what Kawhi Leonard always says is be late. You want to be late. So if they're shooting, be the second off the floor. If they're jabbing, catch them after they jab. Because once they jab, they're trying to jab and go the opposite way. But if they jab and then end up ripping through, just open up, don't get that foul, and beat them to the second spot. I wanted to find the second spot real quick before we move to off-ball defense, Alan, because I don't think that a lot of coaches maybe use the second spot. But the first spot would mean containing the first dribble. So on a triple threat, if they open up and rip through, if you try to beat them and chest them up on the first dribble, that's where you get a lot of tic-tac fouls, a lot of hands fouls, a lot of fouls that, you know, end up you arguing with the ref, but the refs call it because as soon as the ball gets on the floor, you try to jam them, you end up getting a hand on their hip and riding them, and refs call that. The second spot means instead of trying to beat their first step, just understand that they're going to take another dribble. We're fine with giving up a contested long two-pointer like we talked about in our shot efficiency episode. And so what we need to do is as soon as they, you know, get even with us, instead of trying to ride them, which is where we pick up a lot of fouls and the offense controls us, just get off their body and sprint to where you know that they're going to be next. That's the second spot. And then ultimately we can stop them there. And I think that once defenders get really good at understanding that it's not important to beat them on the first spot, but it's important to beat them to the second spot, that's when they get really, really special on-ball defender.
Absolutely love it. Before we go on to that next part, I want to kind of summarize because you just dropped so much gold on that was while, of course, everyone would prefer to have, you know, be more athletic and to be quicker and faster, the two biggest takeaways or the two biggest necessities to be a great defender that you mentioned, first is your heart. You have to want to do it. You have to fully commit. You have to have pride in being a great defender. But then the second is your mind. Like you have to have a high basketball IQ. I love what you talked about being jab fake and shot fake and pass fake disciplined. Disciplined is all between the ears. And if you can do those two things, then you can actually still be a great defender, even if you may not have elite level athleticism. That would just end up being the cherry on top. Absolutely love that, man. Those were great tangible takeaways on being a better defender. So I think, Drew, from a defensive standpoint, since everyone's always watching the ball anyway, you know, everyone gets, when they think defense, they think about being an on-the-ball defender. But let's talk about, in the team atmosphere, why it's so important to be a great off-the-ball defender and a team defender as well.
You know, those high-level players that you watch, the James Hardens, the Kevin Durant, Steph Currys, Russell Westbrooks, etc., those guys are never going to be stopped. But what they can be is slow down. They also, you can make them less effective and efficient by taking away what they want to do most. And the only way to do that is by playing team defense. So off-ball defenders are so important. I think the number one thing that off-ball defenders need to be able to do is provide detailed communication to the ball. Meaning, hey, I got your help left. I got your help right. You know, I've got your baseline help. Hey, force them this way. Hey, we're icing the ball screen. We're down in the ball screen. Hey, I'm blitzing the ball screen. Just being able to provide detailed communication early, loud, and often so that the guy guarding the ball feels comfortable and understands where they need to force them, what they need to take away, how they need to angle them, etc. The next thing they need to be able to do is be in a proper location in a proper stance so that they can see both the ball and their man. I think that that's something that high school coaches, for the most part, do a good job teaching, But the angle is important. I see too many times, defensive players off the ball are in the right location, but they're angled in a way that if there was a drive that happened and they were responsible for coming over and kind of stopping the drive, they would have to completely open up and change their stance, which would make their closeout to the player they're guarding almost impossible. So I think it's important to be open to both the ball and your man so that you can ultimately stunt and stop the ball without fully committing and making an easy pass or a hard closeout to the man that you're guarding. I think it's also important that the off-ball defenders know their responsibilities. They have to know, who's responsible for the roller if the roller rolls hard and maybe the guy that's guarding the roller blitzed hard and, is out of the play. Who's responsible for taking away the short roll pass? Who's responsible for X-ing out on the weak side if there's a baseline drive, somebody has to drop and meet them outside the box and it's a skip? Who's responsible for closing out to which guy? And I think that's something that good coaches do is they stress, what happens when breakdowns occur. They have to know their rotations. And then the last thing is they have to know scouting and tendencies. Scouting means, a lot of good teams, when they play against Duke, they run back doors because they know that Duke is up in the gaps and they're really overplaying to try to make it really hard for teams to run their offenses. Well, if you know that you're going to really deny one pass away, if you're two or three passes away, you need to make sure that you're really loading to the ball so that if that guy that's, really pressuring the gap ends up getting beat back door, that you can rotate over and meet him outside the box so we don't give up a layup. That's knowing scouting. That's knowing tendencies. And when coaches really get their players to understand the defensive concepts and defensive schemes, that's when they start winning more games on the defensive end.
Absolutely love that, man. This is one of these episodes, coaches. You need to make sure your players listen to this, and then you need to make sure that you go back and listen to this again. Absolutely brilliant stuff, Drew.
That's it for us. Thank you so much for listening. I hope we helped you raise your game. We want to thank our friends at Dr. Dish for revolutionizing basketball training with their state-of-the-art shooting machines and detailed training analytics. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. And if you don't mind, we'd really appreciate you making the time to go to iTunes and leave us a rating and review. All right, it's time to get back in the gym.